And Mebam, the CEO of IEC delegation, you are all welcome to this meeting this morning. Today we will be dealing with the IEC budget as well as the film and publication annual reports, and the last will be the budget review and recommendation report process. I'm sure we all have our agendas in front of us. Okay, over to you. I'm not sure whether it's the chairperson who's going to lead or the CEO.
The CEO will make
the budget. Okay. All right, over to you, CEO. And let me apologize on behalf of the chair. He is not here. He is overseas. That is why he is not with us in these proceedings. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to you and to all the honorable members. We are here to present the annual report of the Electoral Commission and the financial statements for the year ended 31st March 2010. The document has been circulated and it is also on the PowerPoint presentation. In the interest of time, I will not go into the mission and vision of the organization. I will also not go into the legislative mandate because I take it that we are all familiar with the legislative mandate of the Electoral Commission. I will right away start on page six of the presentation. It is also on the PowerPoint presentation and present the strategic objectives of the Electoral Commission for the year that I have just mentioned. And the first one that we adopted was that will position the Electoral Commission as a global leader in electoral democracy.
I'm not sure whether we should continue because some of the members also don't have copies. And to always appeal to departments or entities to, you know, send the presentation before the actual time of the meeting or date of the meeting so that we are able to make copies and circulate them before. Can we continue, honorable members?
Yeah, I was going to suggest that because it's, I don't need to say anything, but the secretary's advice that could be the one that would, yeah. Would that share with my colleague?
We apologize for that. I think we came with an updated version this morning. The one that was photocopied, I think, is the earlier version. So we came with a few copies, but I guess they were not enough. Okay. We apologize for that. But in the meantime, I think we can follow also on the screen. So the first objective is to position the Commission as a global leader in electoral democracy. The second one is to develop strategy, monitoring project implementation, and facilitating independent assurance processes to ensure the effective and efficient functioning of the Commission. And the third objective, to maintain systems and procedures that will ensure an accurate and up-to-date national voters' role. The fourth objective is to implement and promote effective electoral processes that will facilitate the participation of political parties and candidates in the management and delivery of free and fair elections. And the fifth one, delivering a well-run election which produces results that are credible. The sixth one, educating and informing civil society with a view to optimizing citizen participation in democracy and electoral processes. And the last one is to develop and maintain effective business processes in respect of legal services, human resources management, support services, financial management, and information and communication strategies, services in order to ensure the effective functioning of the Commission. I will start, Chairperson, with the first strategic objective, which is to position the Commission as a global leader in electoral democracy. And in that regard, we had undertaken to ensure that whoever wants elections to be managed in this country will look up to the IEC. And in that regard, we had put a target of managing 36 elections of other institutions. We managed 99 elections for other institutions, and we exceeded the target that we had set for ourselves by 36. And if we look at the annual report, it will contain the list of all the organizations we ran elections for. So we did not include it in the slide presentation. We also participated in 6 technical assistance programs. We had set for ourselves the target of 4, and we exceeded that target. And this is the technical assistance that we give to other countries. We observed elections in 4 countries, and in this regard, we achieved our target. And we participated in 1 study tour to another country. What we had intended to do was to look at electoral processes in other countries in order to learn from them and improve our processes. We thought that we would visit 6 countries, but we couldn't because of a number of technical assistance programs that we had to provide to other countries, and therefore we only participated in 1 study tour, and we hosted 12 international delegations who came to us to learn about our processes. And in this particular strategic objective also, we had set for ourselves a target of reviewing our legislations and regulations once a year, and we did that, where we have reviewed our legislation which we submitted to Parliament. And we had also intended to hold 4 meetings with other institutions supporting democracy. We only held 1 meeting. We couldn't hold more than 1 meeting because of the fact that our time was taken by preparations for the 2009 national and provincial elections. We look at strategic objective number 2, and this strategic objective really talks to our auditing processes, and it talks about developing strategy, monitoring project implementation, and facilitating independent assurance processes to ensure the effective and efficient functioning of the Commission. We had set for ourselves a target of presenting our strategic plan to the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs, and to do so on time, and which is what we did, and also to submit monthly and quarterly reports which were submitted. And however, I have to say that the AG in the report in his a financial report did point out that the quarterly reports of the Commission did not track progress against targets in the approved strategic plan. We are in the process of correcting this. We will know that the whole process of performance information is new. When we did our strategic plan and came up with our targets and our reporting mechanisms, we were still learning in the process. But I think for the coming financial year, or this financial year, we will improve. What he found was that in the way that we reported, we did not really look at whether we achieved our targets, and also that our strategic objectives were not smart enough. But we are correcting that. Also, the audit committee met 4 times, as is required, but you will see that from the report of the Auditor General that he made a comment that our audit committee was not quorate for two meetings because it was attended only by two members instead of three. The reason for that is that one of the members of the audit committee just went AWOL, and we tried to locate her. We wrote letters to her. She did not respond, and eventually we had to terminate her services. The audit committee nonetheless met, even if it was not correct, but that particular member never attended most of the meetings, and as I indicated, our attempts to locate her whereabouts were not successful. So that's one of the reasons, that's one of the issues that the AG raised in the report. And the risk management met regularly. And the next page, really, I'm just saying what I've already said, that we note that the AG found us wanting in the following respect: that our objectives were not smart enough, and that when we compile our next strategic plan, we will correct this. And the audit committee, we have since regularized that. We have appointed two additional members, so the audit committee consists of three members as required by the PFMA. Internal audit, one of the issues also that the AG raised was that internal audit did not complete its planned work. And it is true that the internal audit unit did have a plan of action, but they did not complete the implementation of that plan of action, and this was due to preparations for elections. And going forward, we'll ensure that they complete the work that they set for themselves. We continue with strategic objective number three, which talks about the compilation and the accuracy of the national voters' roll. And in this regard, we had set for ourselves the target of registering 22.6 million voters, which means that our target was that the voters' roll should contain 22.6 million. We exceeded that target because for the year under review, our voters' roll had 22.9 registered voters, and we exceeded the target by more than 300,000. And we had also set to verify the accuracy of our voters' roll by checking it against the National Population Register monthly, which is what we did. And we also, in our planning, decided to target areas where we had a shortfall of registered voters in terms of demographics and also in terms of specific age categories. And we were successful in that endeavor because 84% of the people that we registered for the first time were young people between the ages of 18 and 29. So we think that in that regard we also performed reasonably well. And the next slide just gives you a breakdown of registration by age, from between 16 to 17 to over 60 years of age, and we break it down there, and I won't go into that. I continue with the strategic objective that for the year under review, we had 19,726 voting stations that we identified, and these are the voting stations we used for the national and provincial elections. And of these 19,000, 18,608 were permanent and 1,061 were temporary voting stations, which means tents that we used, and 57 were mobile voting stations. We had undertaken to reduce our mobile voting station by 0.3%. We exceeded that target because we reduced our mobiles by 2%. And 18,608 of the permanent voting stations, 16% did not have electricity, 6% did not have ablution facilities, and 10% did not have running water. And we set infrastructure task teams which met twice a year as planned with the aim of improving infrastructure at these voting stations. And in fact, the improved infrastructure that you see in the slide is as a result of the work of this infrastructure task team. The infrastructure task team is made up of IEC and of other departments that provide services like water affairs, like public works, ESCOM, Telcom. We all meet together to look at the voting stations that we use, to look at the facilities at those voting stations and to improve the facilities. And I must say that with each election that we hold, the infrastructure at our voting stations, particularly the schools, improves as a result of the work of this task team. We then go to strategic objective number 4, which is implementing and promoting effective electoral processes that will facilitate the participation of political parties and candidates in the management and delivery of free and fair elections. And we held, in this regard, 1,254 party liaison committee meetings at national, provincial, and municipal levels, and we exceeded the target. And the target that we had set for ourselves was 494 meetings, and as you can see, we held many more meetings than we had set for ourselves. And we registered 139 parties or our registration of parties, our register of parties contains 139 parties, 106 of them operate at national level and 33 at municipal level. 6 new parties were registered and 36 were deregistered. And the registration and deregistration of parties was completed within the legal time frames. We also held by-elections as required, and these by-elections were held within the 90 days prescribed by the law, and we held 139 by-elections, and this marked a decrease of 14% from the 2008-2009 financial year. And the main reason for the vacancies for ward candidates is 46 were as a result of death, 44 were as a result of the resignation of councillors, and 28 were as a result of the expulsion of councillors by their political parties. And we filled in 365 PR vacancies, and we filled them within the prescribed 35 days. And the main reason for this PR, which is proportional representation, vacancies in local municipalities, 218 thereof were as a result of resignation of councillors, 65 as a result of expulsion of those councillors, and 43 as a result of the death of the councillors. And the PR vacancies in district councils, 22 of them resigned, 5 were expelled, and 2 vacancies were caused by the death of councillors. We have also, if you look at the previous slide, it gives you a breakdown of the by-elections that we held per province, and also the number of VDs that were involved in those by-elections. We go now to page 20, which looks at the strategic objective number 5, delivering well-run elections which produce results that are credible. And in this strategic objective, we achieved all our targets in terms of all our local offices. Local office infrastructure was functional and secured in terms of municipal agreements or the commission's procurement services. We procured all the necessary electoral material, including the voter's roll, ballot paper, security materials that we used for 2009 elections. We did so within the timelines that we had set for ourselves, and we achieved 100% target that we had set for ourselves. We made sure that we had 100% availability of warehouses at national and provincial level. And as we know, the elections were held on the 22nd of April 2009. Special votes took place on the 15th of April for those who voted outside the country, and on the 20th and 21st of April for those who voted inside the country who could not exercise their right to vote on the 22nd of April. The voter turnout for that election was 77.3%, and we exceeded the target of 65% that we had set for ourselves. We also set for ourselves the target to enhance, or the objective of enhancing, the transparency of our electoral processes, and thereby we audited our result system, we audited the result, and we scanned the result slip. And the scanning of the result slip is a process that we introduced, the initiative that we introduced for the first time for the 2009 elections, to ensure that our results, captured results, were accurate. And the 2009 elections results were declared within 3 days, and we exceeded the target by 4 days, because in law we have to announce the results within 7 days. So we did fairly well there as well. We go to strategic objective number 6, which talks to civic and voter education. And the objective was to educate and inform civil society with a view of optimizing citizen participation in the democratic and electoral processes. In this regard, we have set for ourselves the target of 246,170 interventions. By interventions here, we don't mean individual events. We define interventions in terms of the number of people that we reach. If we have an event, if the event is attended by 500 people, then that would be 500 interventions. That is why you see those numbers being so large. So the number of people that we reached in our civic education interventions were 1.3 million. And this our civic education initiatives contributed to the enthusiastic participation of voters, and we collaborated with various partners and stakeholders. We produced educational voter education materials, including illustrated booklets. We had Democracy TV dramas on our public broadcasters. We had outside broadcasting initiatives as well that we did at tertiary institutions in collaboration with the SABC. And we, in the next slide, we look at the campaigns we had. We had set for ourselves 10 campaigns that were going to be conducted in 10 per province. And we achieved the performance target. And we had set ourselves to hold 54 stakeholder engagement, that is 6 per province, and we had 36 stakeholder engagement. We did not fulfill our target there due to time and capacity constraints. And we are, on the next slide, we're giving you just a breakdown of our interventions per province, and also whether we reached our target or not. If you look at the last column there, in all the provinces, we exceeded our targets. We also conducted a voter satisfaction survey to look at whether our services reached the people they were intended for. And this voter satisfaction survey was conducted on election day, and we commissioned the HSRC to do this for us. And the survey found that 54% of the voters found political parties to be tolerant of each other during election campaign, and 21% found them to be somewhat tolerant. 64% of voters took up to 15 minutes to vote, while 22% took between 16 to 30 minutes to exercise their vote. 96% of the voters reported that no one at all tried to force them to vote for a particular political party, which means that they exercised their right to vote freely. And 73% of voters were satisfied with the level of the commission services, and 24 were satisfied. Oh, 73 were very satisfied, and 24% were satisfied with our services. Of course, time and capacity constraints resulted in some targets not being achieved. We thought that we would publish three new publications, we would develop three new publications. We couldn't do that. And we thought that we would have two research projects. We only had one, which was the exit poll that I've just referred to. We thought that we would have would publish some occasional papers. We defer that to 2012. We won't even do that in 2011 because it will be an election year. Our library review also will look at it in 2012. And we also are trying to set up an election museum. We thought we'd do it. We'll defer that to 2013 as well. And regarding communications, we hosted 6 media briefings, issued 54 media releases, held one national media workshop, and conducted more than 100 interviews. We established an efficient public call center with a drop call rate of only 4.6%. And the successful programs that and events that we held included the Women's Month celebration. We set up a program for youth ambassadors, which is the young people that we identified who then encourage other young people to participate in our electoral processes. In fact, one of our youth ambassadors is Natalie Detroy, who has just come back from India with a number of gold medals, and we have issued a congratulatory message to her. And we published 2,000 copies of the annual report and 3,000 copies of the election report. These were printed and distributed, and our media campaign was also quite effective. We had a number of radio adverts, we put billboards, 555 billboards, and we had TV commercials, and we utilized all the platforms, SABC TV, radio, ETV, community TV, commercial radio, and print media. And we think that for the elections 2009, our communications campaign was quite successful because I think we were in the face of all South Africans at all times. We now proceed to strategic objective number 7, which is really about our business processes, which is developing and maintaining effective business processes in respect of legal, human resources management, support services, financial management, and ICT in order to ensure the effective functioning of the Commission. We produced election and legislation booklets, which contained all our laws, and we published 16 election notices relating to 2009 elections. We had 12 legal cases during those elections, and 11 of them involved vacancies and replacement of municipal councillors. 223 contracts and lease agreements. 323 contracts and lease agreements were concluded. Regarding human resources management, the total number of posts that we have in the organization according to the approved organogram is 806 posts. And there were 94 vacancies as at 31st March 2010. 57% of the planned 170 posts were filled, which means we exceeded that. We had set for ourselves a target of 50%. We exceeded that target because we filled in 57% of the existing 170 vacancies. We also complied with our employment equity numerical targets that we set for ourselves in our 5-year plan. We only had a staff turnover of 2.9%. We took disciplinary action against 17 employees for financial misconduct and also for misconduct and fraud, and 12 cases were referred. The cases of dismissal were referred to the CCMA. Regarding sick leave, we also give you statistic here. statistics of sick leave, and we give you the figures for 2008-09 and 2009-10 financial years in comparison. And in some cases, for instance, at senior management level, the number of sick leave days at that level have increased. But if you look at manager and deputy, they have increased since 2008 and so forth. So we're just giving you those comparative figures. We also give you figures of employees who died also for the years 2007 to 2010. The number is increasing, and we also give you the average age of the employees who left us. The next slide, we give you the number of employees who were recruited, those who were promoted, and the ones who resigned. And we can see that the resignations are really at the lower levels. As assistant administrative officer, we had 13 resignations and so on. And we also give you staff turnover resignation percentage. We look at the years. For 2007-08, we had 11 resignations, which was 1.8%. For the following year, 10 resignations, 1.6%. And for the financial year under review, 21 resignations, 2.9%. And the resignations, as I indicated, are at the lower echelons of the organization. Regarding training and skill development, there were 17 training interventions that were conducted at our Center for Elections Learning, and 59,257 electoral staff members were trained for these past elections. We awarded 118 bursaries to our employees, and we recruited 8 interns. And we just give you a breakdown of the courses and the number of participants, the courses that our employees went through, and the number of employees involved. Because we are an organization steeped deeply in project management, that's why a large number of our employees had to do project management training, and we're giving you all the number of the courses that our employees went through. And we continue that also on page 38. You'll see also that 40 of our employees went through a financial management for non-financial managers for reasons that will become evident when we present our financial statements. Procurement and assets, still under strategic objective number 7. We reviewed our procurement policies and procedure to ensure that we align them with the supply chain management requirements. We implemented an electronic procurement system, which is a system that saves us a lot of money and takes out human interference in procurement processes. We targeted BEE and SMME suppliers in order to strengthen the Commission's supplier database. We conducted stringent due diligence audits on companies that we consider for contracts to ensure that they can deliver the services or goods that we want. We maintained an asset register. We reviewed the asset policies, procedures, and processes to ensure that they comply with the requirements of PFMA, GREP, and IFRS. Of the procurement, in procurement, we awarded 646 contracts to the value of 245 million. Of these, 404 went to BEE companies, which constituted almost 58% of total contract value. Non-SMMEs were awarded only 35.3% of the total value of contracts. We have to point out that the AG found that the Commission did not ensure that the bids were advertised in the government tender bulletin for a period of 21 days. This has since been corrected. We now advertise all our tenders in the government tender bulletin. Regarding ICT, what the ICT department focused on was the development of the 2009 election result system, the enhancement of the issue tracker, the enhancement of our website, enhancement of our electoral staff system, the call center and the GIS support. These are all ICT-based systems that were developed by our ICT department. Regarding financial services, which is still part of strategic objective number 7, we maintain financial reporting and internal control mechanisms by developing and maintaining standard operating procedures in our SAP, liaised and cooperated with the Auditor General and internal auditors in respect of external and internal auditors, and made sure that we adhere to the PFMA and Treasury regulations and internal policies and procedures. Of course, some targets were not achieved due to lack of adequate human capacity. For instance, the reconciliations were not finalized by the 10th of each month as required. Payments were not made within the prescribed 30-day period. Updating of our financial directives, policies and procedures was not done, and we did not revise our standard operating procedures. We have addressed all these because we have appointed suitably qualified staff members, and we are now able to reconcile, to finalize our reconciliations on the 10th day of each month. We are tracking our offices to ensure that they pay all the invoices within 30 days. We have updated our financial directives and policies and procedures. We have submitted that, or we have already submitted this to the Commission. The Commission has approved this together with our standard operating procedures. If we look at our annual our report, the Auditor General has expressed a qualified audit opinion for the first time since 2001. And the basis for a qualified opinion, if one looks at page 130, note 22 of the annual report, it's in respect of administrative expenditure. The first one is operating lease expenses to the tune of 39 million. The amount presented in the annual financial statement represents the actual expenditure incurred in the current year and was correctly accounted for. However, the qualification is as a result of the exclusion of future expenditure based on the lease term and the escalation for the 235 MEO offices, and this was not taken into consideration in the compilation of our operating lease expenses as required by GRAP, which means that when we stated our operating lease expenses in the annual financial statement, we did not include or factor in the escalation amount. And this is what this qualification is about. And the corrective action that we have taken, we are going to, or we're in the process of compiling an up-to-date register of all lease agreement at national, provincial and local level, and this will be used for monitoring purposes. We lease many, many buildings. We remember that we have warehouses at national, provincial and local offices. We also have offices at national level, at provincial level and at local level. So the lease agreements, you know, are normally located at our local offices, but we did not have an up-to-date register of all the lease agreements that we enter into, including the voting stations, by the way, because even for voting stations, before we use voting stations, we have to sign a lease agreement with the voting station, whether it's a church or a school. So we have now undertaken to compile a register of all lease agreements so that we can then correct this. The second basis for qualification is for subsistence and travel, and this is based on an amount of 114 million paid to temporary electoral staff who worked on election day. And from the audit sample, the error found by the auditor is 27,000, but the total expenditure was qualified. What I should explain here is that on election day, we employ more than 200,000 staff members who work at our voting station on that day. And what we have done was to require each and every person who we employ, one, to sign a contract of employment with us. Secondly, to also sign an attendance register on election day as proof of the fact that they worked on that day. Those are the standards that we set for ourselves. Now, what the Auditor General did, he took a sample to see if everybody that we had paid had actually signed an attendance register and had actually signed a contract of employment. And they found that some people, they did not look at each and every person. They did a sample. They took a sample. And out of that sample, the sample was worth about 27,000 of the expenditure that we paid. And by extrapolation, because they found that some people in that sample did not sign the contracts or did not sign the attendance register to prove that they worked on election day, they then qualified the total expenditure to say that we misstated that expenditure because we do not have proof that those people actually worked, because they did not, some of them did not sign the attendance register, some of them did not even sign the contract. That's what happened. This is a very difficult one, as we know that due to human error, you can give people instructions to say the first thing that you do when before you open a voting station is to make sure that you sign the attendance register. Some people will sign, others will not sign. And even the contracts are like that. Some people will sign the contracts, others will not sign. And this is what happened. And in some instances, you know, elections, you engage people, they sign contracts. Some of them do not turn up on election day. You have to replace them. And when you replace them, it's an emergency situation because you replace them on the day of the election, on the spot. And at that time, you don't have time to give them a contract to sign. And this is some of the cases that the AG found. And in some instances, some people who had signed the contract were paid even if they did not turn up for work, because we did not have a system. At that time, you know that you have signed a contract with this person, and that person is on our electoral staff system, and when payment time comes, you pay them, only to discover that you pay them when they were actually replaced because they did not turn up. So it's all those kind of things. But while the Auditor General here, he did not look at all the cases, as I said. He looked at a sample, and by extrapolation, he disqualified that total amount. The corrective action that we have taken, we are in the process of reviewing our electoral staff recruitment and payment plan for the 2011 elections, and we are investigating the use of maybe registration diaries that we'll use, that people will sign on voting day. Maybe one of them only. Maybe we should not require everybody to sign. We are looking at that. Maybe we should say that the presiding officer must sign on behalf of everyone. But we're investigating a more efficient way of doing this that will not lead to a qualification. And the third one, the basis for qualification is commitment, and this is an item that is disclosed as required by the accounting standards and does not have an effect on the actual expenditure incurred in the current financial year. The contract commitments disclosed in the annual financial statements are contracts that the Commission has either a legal or contractual obligation to make payments in future and were available for audit. The estimated future payments included all the contracts of the Commission and not only those that were legally committed. We made a mistake in the financial statements. I think we put all our commitments in there. For instance, if we have a contract with a travel agent, we put, you know, as a commitment, everything for that we're supposed to pay for that to that travel agent, not only what we actually used. I think it was an accounting mistake that we made with Mr. Mafuya. It's a technical thing which he will explain better than I am explaining it. And a corrective action here is an up-to-date register will be maintained to assess the nature, extent, and value of the contractual commitments on a quarterly basis. Although we are very disappointed that we received a qualified audit in respect of those three items that I have just stated, but we have to state for the record that all the funds expended by the Commission have been accounted for and that there were no misdemeanors involved in any way as far as the basis for qualification is concerned. What I'm saying is that the qualifications are of a technical nature. Doesn't mean that anybody has misused the funds of the organization, because we've been able to account for each and every cent that we expended. I think I will leave it here, and then from there, with the permission of the chair, I don't know how you want to proceed. Mr. Mafuya is available to present the financial statements. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. I think Mr. Mafuya can continue with the presentation of the budget.
Thank you, Chair. The annual financial statements have been prepared in accordance with effective standards of generally recognized accounting practice, including any interpretations, guidelines, and directives issued by the Accounting Standards Board. The statements have been prepared on the historical cost basis. For the year under review, the Commission received 937 million from the Department of Home Affairs. In addition to that, there's other revenue consisting largely of investment income would be your interest received on surplus funds that we invest with the bank, and sponsorship income that is of 4.2 million. All the funds have been accounted for and disclosed in the financial statements as indicated on page 112 of the annual report. Again, for the year under review, we had a budget of just over R1 billion, but the actual expenditure was 940 million rand, giving us a variance of 130 million rand. We have a detailed income statement on the next slide, which shows that the total income received is 961 million. Again, that's broken down into the investment income that we talked about and the sponsorship income and small amount of other income, which gives us a total of 961 million rand. The expenditure is broken down into personnel expenditure of 292 million rand and broken down as indicated on the next slide. The biggest amount being salaries and wages, and as indicated in that slide. The next slide shows expenditure of administration expenditure of 232 million rand, broken down as indicated in the slide. And the balance of the expenditure is reflected on the next slide, the biggest amount being professional fees and other services that would include mostly things like communication, telecom, and so on. I don't think we should be elaborating on the qualified opinion, because the CEO has spoken on that extensively. All I can say is that further down we have what we call emphasis of the matter issues that were raised by the Auditor General. One being an irregular expenditure. Basically, that in terms of that treasury regulation, were supposed to have got treasury approval before buying vehicles through a contract that has been approved by the treasury, and also using that contract for maintenance and fuel for the vehicles. We have since taken up the matter with the treasury, and the treasury has given us the go-ahead to go ahead and buy vehicles using the contract. But the outstanding matter, which they are still looking at, is the question of fuel and maintenance. The other matter that the Auditor General raised was non-compliance with the PPFA, which is Preferential Procurement
Policy
framework. In terms of which all purchases in excess of 30,000 rand should be scored in terms of that act, which basically is there to promote the use of the SMEs and the BEs. We as a CEO is included trying to look into that matter. We are on a roadshow as we speak to make sure that everybody sticks to that. And I would like to indicate that no action has been taken because there has been no financial misconduct. But we are making sure that for future purposes, as of now, there will be no non-compliance. And the question of the late payment CEO is addressed. And the question of not advertising this with a government tender within 21 days, the CEO has addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, CEO. Members, time for questions, comments, clarity-seeking questions. Honourable Lovemore, followed by Honourable Ngasela. Ngasela, I'm learning. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chair. And let me just say to the presenters, I'm new to this committee, and I must tell you that it's an absolute privilege to be addressed by an entity which I think we all are, those of us who are politicians and very involved in the electoral process, all are quite in awe of and really believe that you do a magnificent job. There obviously are problems, but overall, over the years, I think this entity has performed outstandingly well, and testament to that is the 99 other elections that you've been involved in. And also, Chair, any entity or any organisation that has such a low turnover rate is an employer of choice, and achieving that is quite outstanding. So I really do congratulate you on that, and as I say, I feel very privileged to be here to listen to your presentation. Chair, on page 107 of the annual report, it's part of the Auditor General's report, and he talks about, and it's again the PPPF Act and Preferential Procurement Regulations, but he mentions a number of non-compliances under leadership, particularly and under financial and performance management particularly. Things like, and I'm just quoting odd phrases here, did not have documented policies and procedures, did not fulfill their duties and responsibilities, did not have sufficient monitoring controls, did not have key controls to address the systems, did not have reliable information systems. There are a number of instances where there doesn't appear to have been adequate management and monitoring, and so I would appreciate comment on that. And then, Chair, just going back to page 44 of the annual report, I'm interested to hear the CEO's views. One of the aspects of Strategic Objective 6 is the institutionalization of civic and democracy education in the formal curriculum. And it would be interesting to know what is included there. You, I'm sure, are aware that people like Mampela Rampele have recently come out and said the IEC should be doing more, that voter education is more than just telling people to make a cross and to get out there and vote, etc. It's much more than that. It's for them to understand democracy. So, and I know that's a whole subject on its own, but I'd be interested to know what your key areas of focus are there. And then, Chair, just linked to what is on page 48, it says the period following the 2009 elections was dominated by provincial and national review processes, and that it strengths, good practice, challenges, etc. Now, there are a number of things that have come up over the past few years that aren't yet in place, and I'd be interested in your views on this. One is e-voting, voting online. This is something which has come under discussion lately. Has it formed part of your review? And if so, what has come out of that review? The second is electoral reform, which has hits the news every now and again, is something which quite possibly is necessary in our country. What sort of role does the IEC, or the Electoral Commission, play, particularly with respect to electoral reform, and has that formed part of your review processes? Thank you, Chair.
Over to you, CEO. Chairperson, I will ask also Ms. Mafia to look at the issues on page. I didn't write the page down.
107.
Let me attempt to look at page 44 in terms of institutionalizing civic and democracy education. It's a project that we started a number of years ago to infuse civic education into the school curriculum, and we piloted it in a number of schools. And our intention really, and we had developed a standard generating, I can't remember the SGB in democracy, human rights, and peace and elections. And we did that quite a number of years ago in collaboration with the Human Rights Commission. And we thought that after piloting this in a number of schools, we'd then hand over the curriculum that we had developed to the Department of Education so that the Department of Education can then roll it out to all the schools. But there was a problem with that, because the Department of Education, Basic Education as it's now called, felt that there were a number of such initiatives. There were people who wanted to include quite a number of things in the curriculum, overloading the curriculum as a result thereof, and decided that maybe for now what they want to concentrate on is to teach learners the basics, arithmetic and all, so that all these other extras will probably be looked at later. We're still continuing on our own with that initiative, but we have not reached a point where we can hand over the curriculum to the Department of Education to make it part of the syllabus. That we have not been able to do, but we are engaged in discussions with the department, and we've had a meeting with the Minister of Basic Education to take that process forward. Regarding what we cover there, it's civic education, the importance of voting, the constitutional values, and those kind of things. As to, we saw snippets of what Dr. Mampela said in the media, that what she was quoted to have said. I mean, we don't know whether that's what she actually said. but we don't think it is our responsibility, because what she was quoted as having said was to say that our voter education should also include that the electorate should has the right to vote people out of office if they do not
deliver on their promises. And we discuss this, and we don't think that's part of our mandate, really. We think we have, our mandate is to educate people on their civic responsibility, the importance of exercising their right to vote, and that's how far we think we should go. Otherwise, if we tell them that if a party A does not perform, please vote them out, we think we'll be entering the realm of politics, which is really not our responsibility. And then regarding page 48, e-voting is something that we are investigating. Some of our colleagues led by the deputy chair of the commission, went to India to look at the electronic voting machine of India. I've just come back from Brazil. You know, Brazil had their elections last week, presidential elections, and they also use electronic voting. We looked at their machine as well because as the commission, we have undertaken to look at new initiatives in that regard. And after we have looked at various, and some of our colleagues had gone to Mexico as well, and after that, we will then have to make a call whether we are ready to go electronic voting, to look at the pros and cons of electronic voting, because it also has a lot of advantages and disadvantages in terms of paper trail verification. You know, your electorate has to be quite sophisticated to be able to use that. Regarding electoral reform, the role played by the IEC in electoral reform, if one looks at our founding legislation, it also says that we can review electoral legislation and make recommendations to Parliament in that regard. And that's what we have done. The bill that is before this committee, we have looked at for the first time, for instance, special voting in local government election, which is a new initiative, because in local government elections we never used to have special votes, and those are the kind of things that we introduce, because after every election we hold debriefing exercises and we then say what is it that we did well in the election, what is it that we can improve, and as a result of that we come up with a number of new initiatives, and special votes for local government elections is one of them, and also looking at section 65 of the municipal, the bill before you, in terms of what the role of the commission is when it comes to the situation not being conducive to free and fair elections. If people feel that the situation around the voting station was not free and fair, that people were intimidated, were harassed before they exercised their vote, can any person submit an objection to the commission in that regard? And that's an initiative that we also introduced, because we felt very strongly that the role of the commission is more than just counting votes. The electoral commission can not only concentrate on what is going on inside the voting station, it must also look at the conditions around the voting station to see whether they are conducive to a free and fair election. And that's section 65 of the bill that is before this portfolio committee was informed by that as well. Thank you.
If I may add my own comment on this, is that we have been running elections. This next year will be only for us. I want to emphasize that the sixth time South Africa runs elections. And the priority for us has been mainly around the processes of verification of the results. The most critical area in elections is really the trust, transparency, full understanding of that process. And I'm sure people can talk on this thing, because in most countries around the world, what becomes the problem is not the process, whether you are doing it or you are doing it electronically, how much it costs. The bottom line of really elections is the final one. And as a new democracy, we have spent a lot of time in that. We probably have set one of the most modern systems that has cost us millions and millions. And Madam Chair, after the incident in Kenya and in Zimbabwe, we then had to look at our situation in South Africa and to see how we can still improve it so that everything is total transparent, especially from the results from a polling station. Of course, people would like us to move into new electronic thing, which a lot of the countries who use it, if you look at India, they started differently. In India, the sensitivity is not as high as South African one, because India has been running elections for many, many years. And so I think that people obviously think that we should move faster. It seems to be a lot of interest from some quarters that we move into this new modern way. It's wonderful, I think. And I think that South Africa will need to see how best to do it in our context, where we have many parts of South Africa that still do not have electricity. And so within the South African context, we have to look at providing for two worlds, our very modern, urban, modern facilities, but at the same time, see how you can not simply transfer those to a rural area. And so I think it's a process that needs a lot of studying, which we are already doing. I think I just needed to make that as a comment, because sometimes we sense that political parties will be keen on that, but really that's not where the issues of controversy lies with elections. But it's, I just thought I needed to make that comment. And I'm sure time will come after the sixth elections. I think everybody would feel that we are very mature after six times. We always forget, in fact, that it's only six times, just because we were able to get a lot of recognition on the kinds of things we have set in place because of the enthusiasm of the people of South Africa. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Honorable Masela,
questions that we have not yet responded to on page 107 that were raised by the honorable member. I'll take some of them. The others will be taken by Mr. Mafuya. The last bullet that talks about non-availability of key staff members for the audit process. It is true that some members of staff were not available. What happened here is that the audit was conducted immediately after the election. And because we don't pay people overtime for elections, we request them to take leave in lieu of the overtime that would have paid them. So at the time when the auditors come, some people were not available because they were on leave, because as I said, it had happened immediately after elections. And in cases where we became aware, we recalled those people to come back. I must also state that we're going to have a challenge again this time around with the audit, because it coincides exactly now, this time, with the elections for 2011. As we run the elections, we then also have to do the audit. So it's going to be a big, big challenge that we already are preparing for. Performance information, as you know, is a new area that the AG has introduced. And it's an area that all of us are battling with. With us, we are battling even more so because of the type of business that we are in. I think for departments that deliver services such as houses and so forth, where you can quantify and count the number of tangible things that they do, it's probably easier. But where you deliver an intangible outcome like us, to make some of the objectives SMART and to report on them accurately has presented us with a challenge. We are learning as we go. We are perfecting. If you look at our strategic objectives, they are so many. They are too many for this past financial year. And they are not high level, actually. And because they are not high level, they are sort of more of an operational nature than strategic. And that's the learning curve that we are going through. And as a result of that, it was quite difficult to report quite accurately against those objectives and the targets. But when we plan, we're going to have a strategic plan in November. We're going to try and correct this to the best of our ability, taking into consideration the type of business that we are in, which produces an intangible result. There are things, of course, within our business. You can say number of registered voters and put a figure and say, this is what I'm going to do. Yes, you have to do your best to achieve that figure, but at the same time, that is not within our control. Voter turnout is the same. They want a figure to say, commit yourself that will have voter turnout of 35%. You can put it there, but at the end of the day, we may not be able to achieve that. But the Auditor General has said, where you have not achieved, please give an explanation why. So we are learning, it's all new, we've made mistakes, but we're hoping to do better the next time around.
Yes, Chair, on the availability, non-availability of staff, I want to add that in terms of the Auditor General, when an issue has been raised, we are given 3 days within which to respond. But if the official is on leave, then that becomes even more difficult. That's one of the reasons why some officials were not available. As indicated by the CEO, we are all on a learning curve. And that goes for the preparation of the financial statements as well. We are, as she says, we are having a workshop in November to look at this thing and how, indicate how to deal with it, even in terms of the preparation of the financial statements. Thank you.
Honorable Marcel.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must say I accept with pride the remorse and kind of disappointments expressed by the IEC on the qualified audit opinion. It's one of the entities that among the work that we do as Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, we hold pride and always seen the good commitment. I remember we visited them and the others, I think, earlier this year. So it was quite clear that when this audit opinion, I was looking at the report and I was saying to myself, am I losing my mind here? What is going on? IEC, what is next? Are we going to lose votes? So those are the things that you always be worried about. If before the elections, then money is not properly managed, what else can we be looking out for? But the reality is, the explanation is quite helpful. On the presentation, page 23, I must say I'm quite happy with the interventions there, but I needed to check quickly the areas covered. Did you go to the very remote areas, like the villages, where you find that many people do not even know well how to question the presiding officer if processes are not right. And you'll find that in many situations, those who are presiding officers or electoral staff will only be educators and people who are of great stature in that community. Now, generally, those people are not questioned in their society. They are looked upon as people who forever right and having the know-how in that very community. So they need education as much as those in affluent and better communities like townships. Now on page 31, I have seen that there's some actions taken on those who are trying to pull down the name of the IEC by acting in so many funny ways, by either being fraudulent or finding ways of misconduct. Now, how many of those were in fact prosecuted? And if those, especially out of the 17, how many of those were prosecuted? And were there any possible convictions of those? Because what is important here is that when the AG says there are problems here, then you go and search for those problems and address them. Now, how much do you work on the prevention plan to deter those other elements who may still feel comfortable to embark on such unwanted practices? So, indobalekile kunqanda nje inzingabi yamaqanda. Ungafikisela amaqanda biwe ufuna ukwagada qhosele biwe. So that is the important thing that you need to be looking after. Thank you very much, Chair.
Honorable Matebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were complaints from the communities that the IEC are hiring permanent teachers instead of unemployment youth. How are we going to solve it? Or is it very soft? That is the first thing. My concern also, I'm confused about this. It has been approved by the law that a child at the age of, or a person at the age of 16 or 18, which are supposed to vote in South Africa, is that 18 or 16? 18. Okay, because there's some page where they mention 16, so I don't know which is which.
It's
18. Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you.
Clarified. Over to you, CEO. The second question about the corrective action, and also what is it that we're doing proactively to ensure that members of staff comply with the law. I'll ask Mr. Mafuya to respond to that. But the first question that you asked, if you go to page 51 of the annual report itself, we give a breakdown of the interventions that we conducted. It's really, if you look at those interventions, they are both in the rural areas and in the urban areas. For instance, if you look at Eastern Cape, there were interventions in the rural areas. In the Northwest as well, the Mothers Union interdenominational prayer, which was conducted, which I happened to also attend, was at a village. So we try to include all the areas to the best of our ability. Or maybe just to clarify also the 16-year-old, the voting age is 18 years, but we register young people at the age of 16, but they do not vote until they are 18.
Chairperson, I just wanted to follow up on the rural outreach and civic education. Just to say that the way we are structured is such that at every municipality, especially towards an election, we get special people to come in. We've got permanent project coordinators there, and towards an election, we beef up our contingent of staff, and we have field workers, we work with civil society organizations so that we make sure that we touch each and every corner of South Africa. Of course, we can't touch all the 48 million South Africans, but at least geographically we cover the country to make sure, and we do have a bias towards ensuring that we reach our rural areas. And then we also target, we usually say, target young people, target women, go to traditional authorities, just to make sure that we cover every corner. So that's what we do. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. On the question of theft and or fraud and all such, we, apart from our code of conduct that says we have zero tolerance on those issues. Once an employee has been identified as having committed theft and fraud, the first issue is reported to the police. It's a criminal offence. Then we will let the law take its course. But then we also have our own internal processes. If you look at page 108 of the Auditor General's report, which is in the annual report, you will notice that the last two things that the Auditor General talks about are theft of petty cash amounting to 1,000 rand by an employee for personal use. The investigation resulted in the dismissal of the former employee. Two, theft of amounts to the value of 2,400. Part of the amount consisted of petty cash. The employee also purchased goods and paid for services that were intended for personal use through the Electoral Commission's electronic transfer system. The investigation resulted in the dismissal of the former employee. So we do some things to make sure that this thing doesn't happen again as much as possible.
Let me also add that as a result of this audit that we have, which is very painful for us, I must say, because a qualification is not a good thing, you know, if you run an institution. But we're also going to create a position of a compliance officer at a senior level who will then go to all. You have to remember that we have 200, we have an office in each and every municipality. And most of these things happen down there. So we'll have a compliance officer who will visit all our offices to ensure that people comply with all the prescripts, and also to ensure that they're on top of the SAP system that we use and they don't bypass the system. We're hoping that with that we'll be able to mitigate some of these issues in a proactive manner. There was a question regarding unemployed staff for the election. In fact, for the 2009 elections, more than 50% of our electoral staff were from the ranks of the unemployed. We use teachers, yes, as presiding officers, because we also have to retain the skill. Because, you know, to be a presiding officer, you have to train a person over a period of time, and a person gets that experience and knowledge and skill over a period of time. So you don't want to change your presiding officers frequently. So the teachers, most of them are presiding officers, but more than 50% of other staff members that we use for elections are from the ranks of the unemployed.
Honorable Khasibone and Honorable Maduna will be the last.
Thanks, Chairperson. Of the 12 matters that were referred to the CCMA, how many were resolved and what were the outcomes? Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm still also worried. The Honourable Member asked a question about the 17. We just want to know how were they really disciplined. We are not really satisfied with the answer. And the few cases where staff members were recruited and trained and they didn't really report for duty, how were they disciplined? I think I'll end up there, Chairperson.
Over to you, CEO.
The electoral staff is really not our full-time employees. These are people that you employ just for one day to work on election day. What we do is that if they don't turn up, we don't pay them. But some, you know, fall within the cracks because once they are in the system, and if the system, even the system is populated at the local level, we don't do it. The people who work for us at the local level are the ones who populate the system with the people who work for us. And if they don't correct, if they have replaced and they don't update the system, we at head office will then dispatch payment only to find that we're paying to a person who has not worked, and to try and recover is almost impossible because, you know, we pay through bank accounts. But we are looking at all that to see how can we improve the system to ensure that we don't pay people who have not worked and we're able to pick up all those problems. That's what we are doing for the 2011 elections. Regarding the employees and the actions that were taken, the full-time employees, if you look at page 80 and 79 of the annual report, It will give you the disciplinary actions taken, the level of a person involved, and the outcome. And you'll see the EPC stands for our employee at the municipal level. We call them elections project coordinators. And you'll see that the misconducts happen at that level in our local offices. And also as to what happened, the CCMA cases, the outcomes thereof, you'll find that on page 80, a breakdown of the outcome of the CCMA cases. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure all the questions have been answered. Mama, you want to say something? Over to you, my chair.
All of us commissioners should be here, with the exception of one, Judge Msimang, who is also a member of the commission, because we felt it's important for all of us to be part of this presentation, because as it has been expressed, the qualification is the greatest shock for some of us who have been around for 13 years. It's quite something. We have never been this shaken ever. I think we need to say that to you, and so we were also wanting to listen to your reactions. On my left-hand side is Ms. Commissioner Bumlwana, who is the deputy chair, but she's, of course, after 10:30, she takes another hat on, which she does all the time, her services. And next year is Mr. Van der Merwe, who is been with us since we started, and our youngest commissioner, I'm not sure if he's still the youngest, but I think he is, Mr. Terry Tilane, coming from Gauteng. And on the extreme right there, this time we have Michael Hendricks, but they're here for another meeting as well, because they've been doing some work with the committee on the amendment of the legislation on the special votes. But she felt that since she is here, he may just as well come and listen to the discussions that are related to that. Of course, you have met Mr. Mafuya and the CEO and Mr. Stephen Langtry. So I just thought that this large delegation we have is a lot of people, but we are also here for other purposes. We always look forward to coming, but we were not this time. I'm surprised that they were looking forward to coming.
Thank you, Chair. Mama, I think we also appreciate the good work that you do, and a bit disappointed this time because of the qualified report. We always get unqualified, and we are actually proud of this entity, because it's one entity that makes us feel proud. But we hope and pray that you are going to correct all the issues that were raised by the Auditor General, and come next year we will get a better opinion from the Auditor General. We have our next presenters from the FPD. I'm not sure, CEO, if maybe you people want to leave. If you don't, you can just sit around with us and listen to the FPB also making their presentation.
Thanks for the invitation, Chair, but we have to go back to Pretoria. We have an election in 6 months.
We can start with the SPV presentation. We hand over to the CEO of FPB to introduce your entourage. Or is it the chairperson first? Oh, okay. Okay, over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. I can't miss the opportunity to speak this time around because we're full of smiles, Chairperson, after last year. Just want to say that Chairperson, it's a pleasure to be here this morning, and we come with a number of highlights that the delegation will give. We just want to commend you for your support during the amendment of the Act, which resulted in the enactment of the legislation in 2009. Now we've had to tweak our work to ensure that we meet what is expected from us as an organization to ensure that the work is done. The passing of the legislation is also a way of ensuring that we have a council. We did not have a council, and it is with absolute pleasure, Honorable Chairperson and members, that I come to present the Deputy Chair of the Film and Publication Council, Mrs. Natalie Skippers, with me, sitting next to me here. So I thought that at this first meeting she should come. Because of our budget, we could not bring everybody. We hope that when you come to visit us, then you can see everybody. We have seven other colleagues who form part of the council. And I must say that the panel selected very well qualified people. We were almost saying that we wish we had a bigger budget to really cover the country to ensure that the mandate of FPB is met. We have worked very well. We have very well with the media to increase our visibility, and we've had a number of campaigns, especially around the 2010 World Cup, and we to ensure that parents, guardians, brothers and sisters take more interest in what the children are watching, which is the greatest focus of FPB. We are greatly encouraged by civil society organization and their vigilance in ensuring that children are protected and that illegality in terms of this sector is also wiped out. We also just want to recognize some of the media houses that have taken more care to ensure that the content is taken into people's home, is accompanied by parental, by advisory information. Inasmuch as we embrace the fundamental rights to choose as espoused in our Constitution's Bill of Rights, we also believe that these rights must be balanced against the right to protect our children from access to pornographic material or adult content, because out there are still people whose preoccupation is simply to target young people and to use them for pornography. Before I end, I would like to introduce the delegation of our two leaders in the organization. We have our CEO, Ms. Yoli Swam Makasi, and we have our COO, Ms. Mapula Magola. Yes, that's right. She is our COO, and the advantage of having her is that although the CFO is not here, because we were trying also to save on travel, she will be able to answer on matters of finance, because she was our chief finance officer in the past. So we said with the two of them we believe that we'll be able to answer all the questions. We are very pleased, even before the CEO speaks, that this time around, after working 24/7 in the past financial year, we've received an unqualified audit after last year's disappointment. So we are very, very, we come here with lots and lots of smiles on our faces. We've got the council, we are now ready to go. And we want to thank you for your patience and your understanding as we were trying to improve on governance and making sure that the council is appointed and trying to clean our house to make sure we get good systems and we have a clean audit. Thank you. And now I hand over to the CEO to give the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to Honourable Members of Parliament. I just want to remind the COO not to forget the slides. just to take you, she's helping me with the slides, I could see she may forget. Just to take you through the page 3. Page 2 was just a reminder of the visit that we had of the members of parliament to the Film and Publication Board. In terms of the overview, the presentation really looks at the mandate of the Film and Publication Board. It looks at some of the issues that were key concerns of the committee, in particular from the 08-09 financial report, annual report. We highlight key achievements, we also highlight key challenges, and we're looking at detailed performance information reporting according to the strategic objectives, and lastly we look at the financial issues. Our mandate basically is, the committee knows very well, we do classification of films, games and publications, we do compliance monitoring, we do child protection with a focus on sexual abuse, which is, our focus is specifically child pornography, but there is a very clear link between child pornography and sexual abuse of children, because when some of the images actually surface in internet and elsewhere, it's a result of abuse, so we can't deal technically with child pornography outside of the context of understanding sexual abuse of children. So we work a lot with NGOs and professionals both in government and outside who are in that space of work. Just in terms of key issues that we left the committee when we came to present, that we had raised, we reported that some of the challenges experienced in the 2008-09 annual financial year were the issues that related to leadership gaps in the organization and lack of accountability, which led to instability. You may recall that we reported that in the one financial year we had about 3 CEOs in the organization, which showed a bit of instability within the organization. We also indicated that we experienced poor relations with industry and the general stakeholders that we're working with as the Film and Publication Board, especially the media, amongst other stakeholders. There was lack of compliance and weak internal controls. There were lots of gaps in terms of systems and policies in the organization, and there were capacity challenges that were picked up at managerial level within the organization. We had received a qualified audit opinion in the financial year due to incorrect assessments and reporting on assets, due to inaccurate calculation of the lease, due to irregular expenditure. We committed that we were going to turn around the situation, and there's a few mechanisms that we did to turn around the situation, which included setting up a committee that met almost weekly, that looked at all the audit findings, internal and external audit, and on the basis of that developed a program of action to ensure that we clear all those findings. And I can assure the committee that we cleared 99.9% of all the findings that were in the 2008-09 financial year, which I guess put us in a good position to get a clean audit in the current financial year. It is better than qualified, ma'am. It is clean because we don't have any emphasis of matter that has been raised by the Auditor General. So section A of the audit report of the management letter is also clean with no findings. Just in terms of highlighting our achievements in the current financial year that we are reporting on, which is 09-10, finally the FPB Amendment Act was passed. It was passed in March, but finally signed by the President in August 2009. This put us in a good position and strengthened a number of issues that related to the FPB's ability to regulate industry, in particular the new media industry, which is coming up very strongly on a number of issues. I wanted to say that even though the Act has been amended, has been passed, we have another challenge because we've been taken to High Court by a few media houses who are challenging some of the aspects of some of the provisions in the amendments themselves. So we've been working with the Department of Home Affairs legal team and the state law advisors to prepare for the case. We've seen a lot of improvement in terms of internal control environment, and This has been verified through the audit that has been done by the Auditor General. There has been a reduction of our budget deficit from the 8.2 that was reported in the last financial year to the 2.9 that is a current year deficit. And we have made a commitment that we will clean up the deficit within a period of 3 financial years, and we believe that we are quite on track to do so. The strategic plan which we had presented to Parliament, to the committee, resulted in much more improved focus and strategic engagement of the Film and Publication Board. We have dedicated focus on stakeholders, leading to improved relations with industry, other regulators, and relevant government departments. Our experience with industry, though, because we are a regulator, we can never have completely good relations. They are good today, they are bad tomorrow. But at least we are talking to each other. We have platforms in which we engage with each other. We seek their inputs on a number of issues that we deal with. The other regulators that we have to strengthen relations with, in particular, is the BCCFA, which is a self-regulation mechanism of the industry itself, but also ICASA, which there is an overlap of roles and responsibilities between ICASA and the Film and Publication Board. I want to assure the board that we have our own processes of working with them, because we've seen that regulation of content that goes on TV and content generally that is accessible by people, it has an impact, because we have a responsibility around exposure of children to undesirable content. So you can't necessarily say because it's on TV, FPB, you can't say anything about it, because it remains content that is exposed to children. The difference is that the TV broadcasting is just a platform, but our concern about that content is still a major issue. We have a dedicated focus also on organizational risk management. We have strengthened compliance and accountability within the organization itself. We've got a lot of structures that have been put in place, governance structures, your management committee that meets monthly, where managers are expected to report on operational issues, their targets. We have a executive committee meeting that meets fortnightly and even more when there's a need to do so. We've almost like tried very hard to institutionalize reporting and accountability in the organization. This has led to lots of improvements on performance information. We are still not 100% there. We have a few audit findings which are not material currently regarding the accuracy of our statistics. So it points to a weakness in terms of our reporting system and things like the cut-off dates for the end of the month, the end of the financial year, so that we are able to account on the number of fillings and ensure that it matches with the revenue. If we say we have classified 6,000 fillings, we must make sure that that matches with the revenue that we have received regarding the fillings themselves. So there's a bit of system issues that we are working on regarding that. We have increased our presence and visibility in the cyberspace. We have a dedicated focus in the reporting financial year on Facebook. This year we are moving to other platforms like YouTube, because there's lots of young people, not even parents, in those platforms. And I would like to advise members of Parliament who have children that they have to monitor on a day-to-day basis to make sure that they are their friends on Facebook as well. We can run a training for members of Parliament and the Film and Publication Board just to show you the basics. We have experienced increased awareness around our campaigns, outreach campaign and visibility of the Film and Publication Board. We will get into detail later in the statistics, but directly we have interacted with an estimated 160,293 South Africans through direct engagements, going to schools, going to communities, and etc. We also, in terms of our MSA reports, that we have more than 5 million South Africans have had a positive story about the Film and Publication Board, and this is through a number of campaigns that we have run and the positive coverage that we have received from a number of media houses. I think some of them are here today, but I will not mention them by names. We have classified all film games and films submitted to us, films, games, and publications. We have increased rights and compliance visits through partnerships with SARS, and we've improved. We've seen improvements in employee relations, but one of the things we deal with is the staff morale issues. Today the staff morale is high, tomorrow it's low. So it's just a one of those issues you always have to keep on check and understand what benchmarks are you putting in place. But last year when we came, we had serious problems that related to staff and labor relations issues. We believe that the environment has settled a bit. We are not completely out of problems, but the environment is settling. Just in terms of key challenges, there were delays in the appointment of council. This created lots of challenges to the extent that I was even scared sometimes to pick up the phone and call the top chair, because she was effectively almost the only person who is available to do the work of the Film and Publication Board. But this has been overcome because a full council has been appointed, and already we've been running with the full council. The registration and compliance of problematic distributors remains a big issue. And more important than even Bollywood and Nollywood is the street vendors. It's becoming even a bigger risk for us because our compliance monitors get beaten on the streets by the street vendors. For instance, you call the compliance monitor, we've already had two cases. The compliance monitor calls with the police today, they arrest, they do everything. Tomorrow, when that compliance monitor passes that street, the hawkers start beating up the compliance monitor because the police are not there. So it's quite a risky business for us now, and we are reviewing strategies around to how do we really engage with the rates in the streets. The rates in the shops and other things are quite structured. We do them with the police, and there's no challenge with that. The regulation of new media is a big issue. It's a big issue from a resource point of view at FPB. We don't have the sufficient money and capacity because we require specialist capacity of people who know the technologies behind cell phones, behind the internet, and etc. It's also where there's lots of overlapping of responsibilities between a number of entities. One of those relates to overlapping responsibilities with ICASA again, because one of the projects we're working with them now is the video on demand, and whether it's an ICASA responsibility or a Film and Publication Board responsibility, but the point from us is that people are watching films through the video on demand, which is basically broadcasting through the internet, and we need to find a way in which to regulate that, because lots of people now are moving into video streaming. I've spoken about the issue of performance reporting, that it still remains a challenge. We can't say it's a complete achievement, but we've improved a lot from where we started. Inadequate resources, I guess it's the same song we'll be singing to the committee until we get a windfall of money from somewhere. Aligning of the structure of the Film and Publication Board to the strategic plan, it's again another issue that we're dealing with. I think when we come back in future to break the portfolio the committee, we'll break the portfolio committee in detail about the turnaround process that we've engaged in, which is hopefully going to ensure that we align our structure with the strategy, because there are glaring gaps, especially around the issues of understanding technology and the new technology means and project management. Just in terms of the strategic objectives, the first strategic objectives looks at, and we say we want to enhance, integrate, and implement a constitutionally sound regulatory framework. And in terms of this, there are mainly three. This is where our cooperations work reside. We have, in terms of classification, we have classified about 6,080 movies in the financial year. In the annual report, we've sampled some of the movies and included them in the report for members of parliament to have a sense of those movies. We have also classified about 577 games. Classifying games is still a function we regard ourselves as not perfect, because for you to be perfect in classifying a game, you have to play it until the end and understand the different stages of the game. And it may take a month for some of the adults who are classified at Film and Publication Board to classify one game. So we picked up that just the system that we're using for classifying games is not the appropriate system. We need to find an alignment. We also need to do a lot of international benchmarking around classification of games, because all these games come from Europe and US, but mainly from Europe, and there's quite an organized way in which they throw peg, they look at the age rating of the games. But the challenge is that their own age rating is usually very, very low compared to what a South African age rating should be. So we are talking to INWAP to see how we can smoothen the conversion of their own, understand what goes behind their classification model, so that perhaps maybe we don't have to come back and repeat classifying a game in detail, but we have some arrangement or MOU regarding that. We had a challenge of limited number of classifiers. I think we did a brief committee in the past that there was a process we engaged in of appointing classifiers, but because of the absence of the new board and some changes and some challenges that emerged, the process was abandoned. It was nullified. So it left us with a very limited pool of classifiers. The classifiers are basically the people who watch the movies and give a decision, because as part of the Film and Publication Board, we don't do that, the administrative staff. We had two appeals that were launched with the review board in the financial year, quite a significant decrease compared to last year, because last year in the last financial year we had about five appeals that were given. This is just an illustration of a three-year period of how our classification of films and games has been performing. In terms of classifying publications, we haven't really received many publications to classify, and now as part of our strategy, we're going back to understand why is industry not submitting, because there's lots of adult magazines that are in the market, but in terms of classification, why are we not getting more and more classification regarding those? In terms of compliance monitoring, which is still under this objective, this is one of the units that has performed very well and almost exceeded all their targets in the financial year. I think the detail again is in the annual report, but we just indicated that these are the number of compliance visits we have done, and I think almost everything here is 15% exceeded target. If you check the detail in the annual report, the last pages of the performance information, you would also see in terms of the baseline and the targets for the financial year and where we have exceeded the targets. We have done lots of engagements with the distributors just as part of improving relations. Again, that's just a visual presentation of the figures, a comparative over the period of 2008-09 and 2009-10. In terms of child protection, which is the third component of this program, this is really the issue of outreach, because child protection deals with lots of outreach, like what we are doing. They have, through partnerships with the churches and schools and communities, reached directly 60,292 members of the public, and we continue to open an invitation to members of parliament to say, if you know a community somewhere and you want us to come and run a workshop for them, we will be there anytime as long as you inform us of the information, and we will be there to run the workshops and engage the communities. We also have the Train the Trainer program, which has also assisted in reaching out a lot to educators and life orientation practitioners. The internet hotline also has received 72 cases of 72 cases reported as child pornography, but out of those, we confirmed 6 cases, and most of these cases were hosted outside the country. It's internet service providers outside South Africa, and we have then communicated through our international partner in Europe back to those countries. Some of them, they take longer to resolve. I don't have stats at the moment how many have been resolved. We'll only get those stats by the end of November from INHOP. But some of them, really, it's disputes around what is child pornography. What we may regard as child pornography in South Africa may not necessarily be recognized as child pornography in the US and etc. Provisional membership of INHOP, we did report about INHOP. We're going back now in November, where FPB should be receiving its full membership. Research, I think we did update the comment on the Confederation Cup Intercept study that we did, where we wanted to assess what the view of sports or soccer lovers about the danger or non-danger that their children are likely to face during the World Cup.
And the responses that we get were overwhelmingly saying there is a potential danger and that it's important that government takes a lead in terms of ensuring that children are kept safe and protected in the country. We worked a lot with a number of partners. This report is not dealing in detail with the World Cup. That would come in another session when we brief the portfolio committee. But just to say, we worked a lot with a number of stakeholders and through the initiatives that were put in place, it actually came out that the real danger facing South African children is more local than international. There is no significant cases that were reported during the World Cup, but the danger remains local and probably people are known to the children themselves. We also are doing an interview that the University of South Africa that looks at young people's involvement with media and what kind of media are they attracted to and how can you communicate with them the best. Strategic objective number two, this one looks at developing and maintaining organizational capacity and capability. The first issue we look at is people at FPB. And here we just indicated that the work that we've done, which links to the issues we raised earlier about closing the policy gaps, we updated and reviewed all HR policies. We ensured that all staff members signed performance contracts and the balance scorecard system was introduced as a means to plan, track and monitor individual performance. In the same financial year, the FPB for the first time welcomed a union of workers. We have assisted about 38 staff members who are members of the Media Workers Association of South Africa. Performance assessments were completed for 2009-10 financial year and all employees have signed the performance contracts again in the current financial year. We have, in the financial year, we did a review of all contracts of employees. I think this was a result of a concern that was also raised by the board that we need to have a sense of what's happening. And we discovered that there were employees whose contracts had expired, and by virtue of that, then they remained permanent in the organization. So there's lots of regularizing of contracts that we had to do of employees, and that process has been concluded. And I can safely say that 100% of the employees where they have to be know whether they have a contract or not. Some of them may be disputing it because the union want them to be permanent, but they know at least that they have a contract. It's expiring on this date, and if we have to negotiate on the basis of that, then we can negotiate on the basis of that. CCMA and disciplinary hearings, we had three cases of CCMA, which were involved in former HR manager, but we terminated our services due to a number of charges involving mismanagement and dishonesty and possible fraud. The case is not yet concluded. It's actually since disappeared in the radar of CCMA. We tried conciliation, but it didn't work, and we were meant to go on arbitration, but we, in our follow-ups to the case, it's simply just disappeared. We're not sure what's happening. The second one is the former CFO who resigned and then filed a CCMA for constructive dismissal that the CEO made life unbearable for him. But this is a case that also took quite a long time, and finally it was concluded and the decision was in favor of the Film and Publication Board. So we didn't have to settle the CFO at all. And last year, after our best performance with the annual report, the board took a decision that the non-performance bonuses were going to be paid for management, starting from manager up to the CEO. Well, initially it was all staff, but through the engagements with the unions and the negotiations, we ended up settling for 60% of payment for staff below management, because in all fairness, the responsibility and accountability in terms of our structure starts really at the level of managers, because they are responsible to oversee the units. So some managers who are members of MWASA took the FPB to its CCMA as a result of the decision not to pay bonuses. We then did consultation with them. It's the same thing which has not been successful, and the matter has set for arbitration, but we have committed to CCMA that we believe it's not a condition of service matter, and therefore it's not a matter to be heard at the CCMA, and so arbitration is irrelevant in our view. So we're still waiting to hear from the CCMA. We're not sure really what's going to happen with the case. But I think the number of managers has also since reduced. There are probably about 6 managers or 5 managers then, but about 3 of them have resigned from the organization in the current financial year. In terms of job evaluations, we've evaluated all jobs and comparisons were made regarding the remunerations of staff. And we accept the job evaluations for now to confirm that a majority of staff are paid within an acceptable range within the market. All staff have been afforded an opportunity for training. We go again in detail in the report in terms of what training and what training. But we've just highlighted here that we've taken all members of management on advanced risk management training program as well as the PFMA training program, just to also ensure that we strengthen our compliance and accountability. We've also enrolled the CEO and the executives in a coaching and mentorship program in order to enhance leadership abilities. The program was effectively, in fact, rolled out in the 11-12 financial year. I do hope that the council has already reaped the benefits regarding the mentorship program of the executives. On the issues, the third program that we had is around enhancement of our IT and relevant strategy. Here, I think the most important thing is that we want to report is that we are not doing very well, and I think we need to be upfront. We are not doing very well with our IT governance. 80% of our audit findings, the management letter, are focusing on the gaps that are there regarding IT governance, and it's one of the issues we are focusing on. The challenge is always that IT requires money, and we may not have the kind of money that other people have, but we have decided to prioritize with the resources that we have, because if we don't deal with some of those issues, they may escalate to a much more serious stage where once the financial year ends and we start our audit. We have approved some IT policies internally in the organization through the plant, and we're upgrading the infrastructure. In terms of financial management, the CEO is going to give a bit of a detail on this, but I will just go through it as part of the target objectives. We receive the government grant and regulation fees as the main source of funding for FPB. The government grant has increased fairly, but not much, over the years, and the revenue collected through the regulation fees has been declining. We've done an investigation into the reasons for the decline, because I know in some of the slides there's something that says it's due to lower numbers of films being submitted, which is not necessarily the case. The margins are very small of the numbers of the film, but we've picked up that the challenge has to do with the exemptions regime that is in place, because there's lots of films that fall under the category for exemption. So once you're exempted, you don't get the full amount. Some are exempted by half price, some were exempted by quite ridiculous amounts of money. So we've reviewed the whole exemptions regime, and we've introduced exemptions that are appropriate in line with the amendments, which now we've also introduced new tariffs. Tariffs were not reviewed and updated or increased for the past 3 financial years. So we've basically been classifying at a loss, because even the people that we classify for, their prices go up every year, but we've not been reviewing our tariffs. This has since been resolved. The minister has approved new tariffs. Financial management systems, we can say that they've strengthened. And if I were to give a percentage, I would say maybe 90%. We do have accurate financial statements and reports as reflected in the annual financial statements, but I guess we cannot rest. It's something that we have to always keep on a watch, because once we rest, we don't know what may happen at the end of the financial year. The third objective, which is very short, relates to forming and maintaining international partnerships and coordinating initiatives that support the business of FPB. here we look mainly at the program of engagements with new media, and we again want to indicate that we have not done much here because of financial and capacity challenges, as reported earlier. It's one of the things that we have pulled up and are prioritizing even in our 5-year strategic plan. And we have developed our new regulations for social networking sites, and these were approved or gazetted, approved and gazetted. So it's the regulations that we use when we are dealing with your e-stars and WhatsApp and other new media platforms that we engage with. Starting in terms of international relations, we have not reported much because we have not been doing much international relations in the financial year because we had to take hard decisions in order to cut the deficit. One of the hard decisions was to cut down on international troops, amongst other things, because international relations requires that you physically go to these countries to do the benchmarks directly. We feel much more comfortable now to start, but on a smaller scale, to identify areas of benchmarking and the kind of partnerships that we want to engage with. Strategy number 4, which is the last one for us, is to position the Fieldment application part as a visible, credible and professional run organization. Here, in terms of public media relations or public relations improvement, We received 900 media mentions, 90% of them positive reporting on the work of the Finland Publication Board, and this is a significant increase from the 250 media mentions reported in the 2009 financial year. These media mentions included television, included newspapers, included digital media, included radio and community media, like your community newspapers and your community radio. So we've stretched with some presence in a number of media platforms. The major highlights that contributed to the above, because it's not adverts that we have paid for, we couldn't afford to pay for so much. And the major highlights that contributed to this was when FPP was accepted as a professional member to InWeb, is when I did a raid of the adult shop in East London and closed it in December last year. It's during the passing of the amendments, because we issued a statement. It's the campaign we developed and went and worked with civil society structures, mainly against the proposed DSTV 24-hour channel, and it's the announcement of Nexit regarding them putting in place mechanisms to monitor their website, which was a clear endorsement and acceptance of the regulations that I talked about earlier regarding new media. We have also, so we are happy with the improved relations with the media, and we babysitting the relations so much because we want them not to, to decline. We want to keep the media coming. The starting outreach and awareness, we have also spoken of 4 areas of outreach and awareness we have engaged in. The Star Marathon, it's proved to be the most effective way as part of awareness of reaching out to ordinary people. Especially people of different communities. The Super Marathon, it's probably 80% different communities, as in that maybe it is white people. I don't have the exact statistics, but looking at the marathon itself, there's lots of people other than black people who work, and there's always a joke, where are the black people when are working in the Super Marathon? But we've managed to mobilize about 500 people to work with us and to wear the FPP t-shirts. We did a proper arrangement with the organizers and etc. Also with FESPO, which is the exhibition of adult material, and we have even this one, we've managed to work with the organizers and ensure that we put in place requirements that people who exhibit in FESPO must be ensure that their information is classified and that they are registered with the Fieldment Publication Board. Members now have seen last week, I think it was in the City Press, where we closed one operator, one distributor at Spokesman Midrand because they had registered the shop, but all the materials that they had in the shop was not classified. So we had to send in the compliance monitors to confiscate the material. Unfortunately, there was no business for them. The other issue was that we engaged, we recommend that the SAPC and the Academy of Fair, which targets mainly learners. We have a partnership, a very good partnership with the DTI, to consumer protection unit where we participated in the outreach and the consumer, the conference that they had looking at popularizing the new act, Consumer Protection Act. International Film Festivals hosted in South Africa, we've participated in them. We want now to expand to Africa because we want to strengthen our relations with Africa before we can go elsewhere regarding International Film Festival. The Easter Festival, the Cape Town Feminist Expo, we've participated also in all major national events like your Women's Day, your Youth Day, providing materials and etc. and having an information stone. We believe that through this process we have talked directly with more than 100,000 members of the public, even though this has probably reached more than a million of people. We have a few pictures that we just wanted to show to the portfolio committee that shows some of the outreach that we're doing with young and old people. I think there's page through them. It's part of our portfolio of evidence because we are required to keep the pictures as part of the evidence. And then the next slide, I'm going to hand over to the CEO who's going to take the members of the committee through the financial reports. It's not that I can't take you through the report, but at least she has to do something.
Thank you, CEO, and good morning, honorable members. I'm just going to take you through the last section of our presentation, the financial presentation. As you can see on the projector there, we have increasing funds from the grant that we receive from government. If you look at the green bars, they indicate that our grant subsidy has been growing over the three-year period, reaching 39.8 million, which is a 20% increase on the previous year. So we are quite grateful for that increase in the grant. However, if you look at the blue, it shows that the regulation fees that we collect from classification and registrations have been declining, as the CEO has already highlighted, and for the reasons that she's already mentioned. So that is of concern to us because then it means that our reliance on the grant increases on an annual basis, which we would like to see an improvement in that regard. Other income includes income that we may have raised from interest when we get the grant and we are not using it as yet. We invest it and then we get interest on a quarterly basis. So as we utilize the grant and the interest. So that interest, you can see that in the 09-10 financial year was very, very low as indicated by the white graph on the projector there. This is just highlighting what I have been talking about, that there was approximately 20% increase on the subsidy. You will see that it's a huge jump from 2007-08 financial year, where it was 19 million. Now we are at 39 million. So that's been almost 20 million increase on the 07-08 grant. I've already spoken about the declining regulation fees as well. So we saw a 32% decline on previous year, which is a significant decline. Just on the expenditure, we have been, you can see that also our expenditure on personnel has been growing over the years. So this is as a result of obviously the increases that we have, the staff increase, the salary increases. I think in this year we had about 7.5% increase for staff. So we spent approximately 25 million as indicated in the annual report. You would notice that there is almost a 50-50 split on our operating expenses and our personnel expenditure. Obviously the FPB does a lot of our work through our people, so we do, that's why you see that our personnel expenditure is as high as our operating.
operating expenses as well. The operating cost decreased by 5.7% due to various cost-saving measures that we introduced within the organization, as the CEO has already highlighted, mainly on travel, staff development and training, workshops, and fewer research conducted during the financial year. The CEO has already spoken about the non-payment of performance incentives as well, which contributed to the reduction in costs. The next slide is just highlighting that our revenue generated is insufficient to cover our costs, because if you look at the 07-08, 08-09, and 09-10, the blue graph, which is the expenses graph, is above the green one, which highlights that in those years we were experiencing a deficit. I'm happy to report that we did decrease our deficit to 2.8 in the financial year that we are reporting on, but it's still of concern to us that we still have a deficit. And these ones have already spoken about that although our staff costs are increasing, our regulation fees are declining, which means if we don't get huge increases in the grant, we may have to cut out on some of our programs if the trends continue. Okay. The annual report contains a detailed explanation of the Auditor General audit opinion on pages 39 and 40. I just want to focus on on the audit opinion, that it's a clean audit opinion. The CEO made a bit of an error earlier on when she said there are no matters of emphasis. She meant to say that there are no matters that make the audit report not to be clean. So we got a clean audit report in terms of the definition of the Auditor General. But we do have a few matters of emphasis in terms of restatement of corresponding figures. This is just to draw attention to the users that the previous year as the previous figures as reported in the previous annual report had to be restated because of errors that were discovered during the 09-10 audit. Irregular expenditure also, there is some irregular expenditure, about 113 due to payments that were made without concluding a contract with one of the government entities. This is for the security cost that we share because we are in the same building. So we have just taken their security contract and shared costs with them without concluding a contract between ourselves. So that was a concern for the Auditor General. The 502 was for a settlement of one of the long-standing labor relations matters. All these were disclosed during the year to the accounting, to the executive authority and the accounting authority. There was some a little bit of fruitless and wasteful expenditure in terms of penalties and interest incurred on late payment to SARS and nullification of the examiner recruitment process that the CEO referred to earlier on. Overall, though, we had no findings on, no material findings on the performance report. So our audit opinion for performance information was also a clean audit opinion. And there were no non-compliance with laws and regulations that was found. And our internal controls were found to be appropriate and effective. Thank you.
Thank you, Mama Makula. Any additions, CEO, Chairperson, Deputy Chair? Any additions? No additions. Time for questions from the Honourable Members, Honourable Mbasela, followed by Honourable Madonna Peterson.
I must say, Chairperson, you your closer is going quite well. The presentation by the Film and Publications Board Chairperson and CEO, COO, it's quite a very impressive one. I remember last year, more or less, at the same time, it was that you are doing all you can to better the situation. It hasn't been improved, and I'm seated here knowing very well that this might be the first, but it should not be the last. You know, we get these tendencies that because there's been many noise, too much noise rather made, and then you're trying to circumvent that, it becomes the norm. But I think in this case, it wouldn't be a disgrace to continue with the norm that you have studied. So it will be a very good thing for you as an entity to maintain the status quo. However, Chairperson, I was happy because earlier on I was a bit shaky when there was no reference made to page 40. So then I'm happy that such references were made too. Well, I wanted to ask particularly on the issues of the contracts being signed without the necessary processes being followed, and also the amounts where, whatever battles have to be sorted out and settled out of court. But I wanted to know specifically how many of those incidents, the case which is on the signed contracts, as well as of those battles out of court. So that's for information. And Chairperson, the Film and Publications Board forgot to say that we went to Soweto on a special trip to launch a website in Maponya Mall, and that was a very exciting visit. It was more, you know, we normally go out and campaign as politicians when it's elections, but this time we're campaigning for the Publications Board, and it was a very good one. So, and I wanted to also check on their side, because I've asked the minister in the house, the progress and some of the, you know, bits that, or hits that you've got on the internet, people reporting, and maybe through the call centers that you have. What has happened? Do you think this has helped? What has been some challenges with regard to the website itself? On that note, Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation once more. I just want to congratulate FPB for the good work they are doing, especially on child protection and the outreach programs they have in the rural and urban communities. I just want to say thank you for that. I've got two questions here. The first one is, who is responsible for payments which are due to SARS? And has disciplinary action been taken for failure to comply? The second one, since the FPB continues to overspend on its allocation, has the board identified areas in which it could make savings or cut back on non-priority areas if increased budget is not granted? Thank you, Chairperson.
CEO and Member Makula, it's your time to respond to the questions raised.
The first question around the incidents on unsigned contracts and out of court settlements. This was the part of the audit. They took a whole sample of contracts of the Film and Publication Board, but this is only the one finding that related to contracts. What happened is that we share a building with National Film and Video Foundation. I think 3 years ago, when FPB moved into the building, we committed to share security course with the organization, and there was no arrangement that was made. I believe it's a once-off situation, it shouldn't happen again, and we've already corrected it. Regarding the out-of-court settlement, this is a case that has been long in the FPB books. I think it started in 2007-8 financial year, and where a manager was, service was terminated, the manager went to CCMA, and CCMA awarded in his favor, and FPB contested the decision of CCMA and went to the labor court, but the board had to take a decision on the basis of assessing the case, and whether really we stand a chance to win as an organization, or simply settling and just paying off the manager the years that were remaining of his contract. And we tried to negotiate with him and ended up settling regarding the remainder of his contract. We didn't really, from the bits and pieces of information that I got exposed to in trying to resolve the issue, we didn't seem to have a strong case. He was fired for non-performance, but there was no clear performance management system, a paper trail that could indicate in detail, which is why there was a finding, which is why even the decision of the CCMA, it was in his favor. So I hope we will not have other cases of that nature. We get taken to CCMA quite on a number of occasions by staff members, but I do think that the fact that at least the decision of the CCMA hearing against the CFO was in favor of the organization has also sent a message to people that says that it's not only the employee who wins at CCMA, also the organization can win if their records and everything is in place. But it's also workers' rights to take us to CCMA when they feel like. I'll ask the CFO to answer the question regarding the progress on his regarding the hotline. Who is responsible for payments in relation to the SARS issue? This again is an issue that comes from 3 financial years back. Unfortunately, everybody who was at HR is no longer in the organization at that time, because the process for payment of SARS starts from HR, where they have to do recons and send the information to finance to pay. There was not even a clarity on who was receiving statements from SARS, because we got a shock when we were doing again review of our HR systems and other things. That's when we picked up that there may be a problem. Then contacted SARS, who apparently has been writing to us and getting ready to hand over the case to their legal people, and we're not receiving the letters. We don't know where the letters have been going, but we've since corrected the issue. We've built the reminders for that payment in the system itself. The last question, I didn't write it in full. Have we identified any savings areas in case we don't get the allocation? Yes, we have. Because we have made a commitment to reduce the deficit over 3 financial years. In the first financial year of the commitment, we've reduced it by almost 5 million, or just above 5 million. And our commitment is to continue to decrease it. We've cut on travel. We can't cut completely, because part of our work requires travel. We still have to come to Parliament and account. We have to go and do outreach and other things. But in cases where naturally 5 people would go to an event or an activity, we would rather send 1 person or 2 people if it's necessary. So we still are implementing a number of mechanisms to control expenditure. We're also looking into detail as part of the realignment of the structure. We're looking into detail into the personnel cost of the organization. Unfortunately, we can't willy-nilly cut the number of staff in the organization, because they are protected by the union. But as contracts of people expire, some of them we don't renew them, and as some people resign, we don't fill the positions. We find a way of ensuring that the work is done internally, unless it's really like, for instance, now our communications manager has resigned. But what we did, we appointed the manager who was responsible for outreach to also act as a communications officer, so we don't have to pay another amount for a communications manager. So we're trying to find mechanisms to ensure that we manage our costs. We're hoping for money one day, but we don't know how that day will be. For now, we're operating on the basis of what we have. But we continue to lobby National Treasury and other people to think about our case. Over to you, Mapuno.
Thank you, CEO. On the issue of the how many people have reported child pornographic cases, I would like to draw members to part 5.1.3 of the CEO's presentation, where she highlighted that the internet hotline in the year 09-10 received 72 cases, 72 reports of cases of child pornography, and only 6 were confirmed to be to contain child pornography. This is a problem that we generally experience with the internet hotline, where we get many reports, but when people reporting that you found child pornography on this website, when you look into it to screen it to ensure whether you can refer it to SAPS or other relevant institutions, you find that in fact it doesn't contain child pornography. So it has to do with the definitions of child pornography, which we continuously try to educate members of the public about, but also sometimes it relates to the migration, because it's a crime that people try to hide, so they don't stay long in one place. So by the time you, although I mean our turnaround is a 24-hour turnaround, but by the time you actually get into that website, sometimes you find that it has already migrated. So those are some of the challenges that we are receiving in terms of the hotline. The call center also is the same thing. The call center receives approximately about 500 calls per annum, but you will find that only 3 cases can be confirmed to be child pornography of all those calls that have been reported. I guess because it's also a hidden crime, not many people are free to actually report, although we do emphasize that it's an anonymous reporting facility. We find that not many people are willing to come forward to make the reports. Thanks.
Have we answered all the questions, CEO?
Yes.
Okay. I wish we could have a way of, you know, allocating more funds to this entity because of the kind of work that the entity is doing. And we got an invitation of this marathon, spa marathon. But I want to apologize on behalf of the committee that because we never attended and I didn't get a report that one of us attended, that we do apologize for not being part of the marathon. It's because of the work that we do. Maybe we were in constituencies. I don't quite remember because it was sometime in, was it August? August, yeah. We do apologize for that. But also we compliment you for the good work or the good opinion that you got, and we hope that the standard will be higher and not lower next year. We hope that you're going to put more effort in improving where the Auditor General has raised the issues to be corrected. But CEO, if I could just get a clarity, just a clarity-seeking question with regard to this constructive dismissal. What is meant by constructive dismissal?
Well, Chair, what happened in this particular case is that the CFO was not performing. And it's easy when somebody like a CFO is not performing because the financial reports are inaccurate and he was not living up to deadlines and other things. And so we had been in a process of talking together and trying to understand what the issues are and trying to resolve them. But I think the heat got much for him because also if you fail to submit a quarterly report as a division, then as the CEO I have to act. So on the day I was meant to do his performance assessment for the quarter, he then came to the performance assessment. He had been running away, falling sick and all the stuff. So he came to do the assessment. When he came, I thought he's coming for the assessment, and he gave me a resignation letter. But it was like a 4-page resignation letter. So, or right out of that letter, we picked that he's going to go to CCMA. So, constructive dismissal is when you go to CCMA or when you say you feel the conditions were not appropriate for you to do your job. So, you went to CCMA and said, well, yes, I'm a CFO, the conditions were not appropriate for me to do my job. And there were a number of issues that he had raised. For instance, at some stage, I had asked the COO to almost be responsible for the finance unit because he was forever sick and not coming to work. And he said, so when he came back, I was out of the country, but I had written an email saying that, please COO, please CFO, the COO has a responsibility to look over that unit regarding the following issues. I would like that not to be interfered with until we sit and resolve the issues that are pending. So he says then he was forced to report to somebody who is at his same level, which is not true because the COO is at a senior position or level compared to him. So it's basically those issues of saying the environment was not conducive for him to do his work. But fortunately, we had all the paper trail and the emails and the communication and reports from the audit committee, reports and minutes from the board and the concerns that were raised. So I think that influenced a lot the decision in our favor. So he was found to having run away from taking responsibility and accountability, not because there was unfair conditions put in place for him not to do his job.
Thanks for the explanation. Honorable members, I think we have come to the end of the presentation. We would like to thank FPB for their presentation and for the good report that we got this day. I think we are doing good, or FPB is doing good, because I have a grandson who usually goes to hire these games. SPS, is that SPS? PSP. Yeah, PSP games. And he can't get those violent ones without the consent of a parent. A parent should be there, and you must produce your ID to say that you allow the child to get that. So at least we are reaching there, though it's slow, but we will eventually get there. What we want to get. On that note, we want to thank you, CEO, the chair, and your entourage. And since we are beginning a new process of, you know, the money bill that we are going to get a presentation of next week, we're supposed to get it today, but unfortunately we won't be able to get the presentation today because the person who was supposed to make the presentation has other engagement, so we won't get it today. It will be scheduled for maybe next week. Now, I think it's one of the concerns that we need to raise when we do recommendations to Parliament with regard to that, because we will be making recommendation. I think FPB needs to or we need as a portfolio committee to discuss as to what can we recommend to Parliament with regard to FPB doing its good work or to improve its good work. On that note, honourable members, the meeting stands adjourned.